Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you may be. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed, here on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in number, if you don't already know it, or if you're listening on a smart device and you can't see the screen because you're not in chat, is 619-639-4724. Of course, if you're in the chat room, up top there should be a button you can push if you wish to call in on Skype, if you have Skype. There again, I think the number's up there as well. So I'll be your host from now until 1:30 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and welcome to the show. Okay. One of the things I want to talk about a little bit tonight is zealotry. Zealots, zeal. And a lot of times in proselytizing, you know, they go hand in hand. And it's interesting, you know, people that are religious in nature get tagged for this an awful lot of the time. And they take a bad rap and they get treated as if they're the only ones that are zealots and proselytize. But there's a lot of other people out there that do it too. You know, I find a lot of this goes on whenever anyone has a particular item that they think that they were sent to the world to crusade for. And in particular, I see this a lot in people that are in the vegan movement and dietary movement. Now, let me say at the onset, I have nothing against the vegan diet or, wow, the helicopters are going over. just kidding. There was a helicopter outside. Don't know whether it was a military helicopter, police helicopter, or whatever. Anyway, I have nothing against veganism. I have nothing against whatever dietary lifestyles anyone chooses. And there have been studies that show that when it comes to eating meat, probably you're better to eat less of certainly the red meats. And when it comes to study of veganism, you know, if you don't do it right, that's not good for your health either. That's neither here nor there. What I really want to talk about is the zealotry that comes from people that are convinced they're almost like converted smokers. Now, I smoked for years, and when I gave it up, though, I happen to be someone that has always thought other people have a right to do exactly what they want to do. If they want to smoke, go ahead and smoke. I'm not here to judge you. You know, certainly I can tell people that smoking is not good for their health. I'll recommend, if they were to ask me, I would recommend it. You know, if it was a young person in particular, I might comment on it, I might not. But many converted smokers want to stop everyone from smoking. You just got to stop smoking, got to stop smoking. They go on a crusade. They become zealots. They become proselytizers. Well, a lot of people, in fact, in the vegan movement do this. And I had an interesting interchange the other day. Someone posted the following by James Cameron. James Cameron is the director of the movie Avatar, if you don't recall. And he's done a lot of great works, good, you know, a great movie director, made some great movies, all that stuff. But he said, it's not a requirement to eat animals. We just choose to do it. Just choose to do it. So it becomes a moral choice and one that is having a huge impact on the planet, using up resources and destroying the biosphere. James Cameron. Now, okay, that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly okay. That's perfectly acceptable. James Cameron can say anything he wishes. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that. But I know that people that posted this, they happen to be zealots. The person that posted it goes by the name of Vegan Foods for Thought. Well, I happen to have another friend that tends to be kind of unconventional. And he made a comment one time is the reason people eat meat and the reason they eat animals is because we can. So I'll read the quote again, and then I'll read my response, because it's pretty interesting as we kicked it off. James Cameron quote, for those of you that just turned in, is it's not a requirement to eat animals. We just choose to do so. Do it. So it becomes a moral choice and one that is having a huge impact on the planet, using up resources and destroying the biosphere. Well, a little light bulb goes off in my head, like the people in the newspaper funnies, you know. I get the impish little look, and I write back. Because as I told you, I have a friend that says the reason we eat animals is because we can. We're top of the food chain. And by the way, as a side note, there has been research done that's shown that mankind probably would not have progressed as rapidly as they did had they not eaten meat. But that's a whole different topic. So my comment, I says, you know, kind of what Johnny says, we eat animals because we can. And then I go on with the following. Be clear that all of Cameron's statements about moral choice and beyond are his opinions, all of which he is entitled to, but none of which are necessarily true. So be clear that all of Cameron's statements about moral choice and beyond are his opinions, all of which he is entitled to, but none of which are necessarily true. I didn't say they're false either. I try and choose my words many times carefully for a variety of reasons. I want to communicate things. Well, it was funny. It didn't take much. I actually thought another friend of mine would comment, but he didn't. Okay? Anyway, I got a reply back. And it was, the guy goes by Vegan Food for Thought. What is true, Vernon, is that eating animals is bad for the animals, the planet, and your health. That is big, you know, big bold letters, the truth. We're on a roll here. You know, I start chuckling. Yeah, that is the truth. You know, I'm always wary of is truths. Not that there aren't any. I've said this many times. I believe there are probably universal truths. I believe there are universal truths that we don't know or can't fully understand. There are local truths within our time span. So I think about that. And I think about it for a second. And I get back to them. And so what I get back and say is, Vegan Food for Thoughts, I accept that you might believe to the very depths of your soul all that you say. However, that isn't sufficient to make it the truth. Now, I've talked a lot about truth on this show, and I have never told anyone what the truth is. I'm not set up to be the judge in truth and knowledge in this universe. I certainly have my thoughts. I certainly have my opinions. I certainly have my emotions. I certainly weigh in on things and have an opinion on things, and I try and be well read. I try and search it out. I try and be accurate. But listen, opinions are in fact opinions. I have no illusions or delusions that they're anything other than that. And there's an old saying about opinions many have heard, and that is, in fact, the opinions are like a certain part of the anatomy. We all have them. They all stink. Well, that's not necessarily true either. It's got a good ring to it. The way it actually goes is opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got one, and they all stink. Well, I would say in my impish mind going on is some stink more than others. Some opinions are better researched. Some opinions have more fact behind them. And there's nothing there, again, wrong with opinions. I do have a problem, though, when people step forward and start telling me the truth. Not that there's not validity in what gets said. And it's not that James Cameron doesn't believe what he has to say about eating meat, and not that he doesn't have the right to eat meat, to be a vegan, and not that I salute him if he thinks he's doing the best for the planet. But there seems to be this holier-than-thou aspect that permeates humankind when people make certain decisions about what they consider to be moral issues, whether it be, in fact, whether you eat meat, whether it be indulging in vices, gambling, smoking, drinking, whether it be I did a show this afternoon on being polyamorous. Somehow we just can't accept the fact that people engage in things that we don't approve of. So anyway, I went on to say, I said, in the circle of life, all things live and all things die. You are the one that proclaims taking plant life for sustaining yours is justified and good, and taking animal life to sustain the body is bad. In the big picture, maybe the words of James Cameron's Avatar sum it up best. I don't know if you saw the movie Avatar. There's a great line in there, and this is what it is. Your spirit goes to I can't remember how to pronounce it. Oh, well. Your body stays behind to become part of the people. You know, we all eat for nourishment, and there is a nutritious value in meat. Or as Einstein says, whoever undertakes to set himself up as truth, set himself up as a judge of truth and knowledge is shipwrecked by the laughter of the gods. Well, we're on a roll now. The response I get back is phenomenal. Now, remember, this whole dialogue, we can talk about the ills of meat, the bad, good, the bad, what diet you should eat. By the way, when someone tells me it's better for your health, one of the things that I tend to do and run off and look at is, in fact, is that true? You know, one of the things that I would use to judge that would be what country has the longest lifespans, and are they vegetarians? Are they vegans? I wouldn't tend to think so, but I like to get to the nuts and bolts of it, and I like to try and dig a little bit deeper. There, not that I have my fingers on the pulse of truth and knowledge, but we fire off so easily in what we believe and go down this path and leave very little room. So anyway, he comes back. He says, vegan foods for thoughts. Vernon, it sounds to me like you're making excuses to justify the fact that you contribute to the murder of innocent sentient beings for your culinary pleasure. Yes, the circle of life, all things live and die. Does that mean we should speed up the process and kill billions of animals? And then he goes on to say, let me leave you with another Einstein quote. Nothing will benefit humans' health and increase chances for survival of life on Earth as much as the evolution of a vegetarian diet. Now, Einstein lived a vegetarian diet. I don't think he lived a particularly ripe old age. I think the average life expectancy right now exceeds Einstein. So this is too much fun because people are on their crusades. They've got to convince you. I'll get to the final kernel about this. It's beautiful. I loved it. I tell him vegan food for thoughts. Notice vegan food for thoughts. Notice the only thing I have definitively said is neither James Cameron's opinions or yours necessarily qualify them as truth or make them truth. The same goes for my opinions. At some point here, he had something about how I would feel about eating my doggy and eating my own family. which is kind of interesting. Maybe that's one of those ones that Aristotle would talk about. Can you hold a thought that you don't agree with? You know, people made a lot to do about the Donner Party. So one of the things I see, as I say over and over and over, people get in the realm of things they firmly believe in to the depths of their soul, and there's rarely any room for conversation. It is a certain way. And if you don't agree with them, that's just the way it is. And they're going to teach you how it is. We've had many of those conversations about religion on here, and I'm not against religion. As I said before about religion, though, is if you profess to have the right religion, then maybe I or God, too, I don't know God's thoughts, has a right to expect you to live a life consistent with what you say the way the truth and the light is. You know, if you say veganism is the healthy way to live life, then maybe someone can in fact expect you to live a life that's consistent with what you believe to be so. By the same token, merely believing it doesn't make it true. In this afternoon show, we had a great dialogue about polyamorous relationships. And there was a lot of back and forth and to do there. But it's interesting when people don't see it your way. Can they see both sides of the argument without necessarily agreeing? I see your point of view. I see where you're coming from. And with that, move on with a little bit of respect. The final comment by Vegan Foods for Thought was, understood. Understood, Vernon. Thank you. Peace. And I told him my closing comment was, in fact, Vegan Foods for Thoughts. You're welcome. And same to you. Thanks for a reasoned, thoughtful, civilized discussion. If the world at large would engage in such, there might be less fighting and killing and more discussion and understanding. That's my opinion. If there was more tolerance for listening to the other person, what the other fellow has to say about it, how the other fellow sees it, how the other person sees it, maybe we could just, in fact, have a better chance of reconciling our differences on the planet, which leads us to a lot of strife, etc., a lot of altercation. And then I gave him the Aristotle quote, the mark of an educated mind is being able to entertain a thought without necessarily accepting it, Aristotle. So if anyone has anything to say about something like that certainly is great. I am amazed. We seem to be so attached to our thoughts. This morning I was listening to an AM radio show that they have in my local area every Saturday. It's called the Saturday Special. And it happened to be old news, okay? It happened to be old news. But the person that, in fact, was presenting it is pretty credible. He goes by the name of Mr. Logic, Bob Bishop. He used to have a show called The Thinking Machine. He was right there for the beginnings of Apple, was a programmer, a very, very bright man. And he happened to come across something, a video, a YouTube video that's been out since 2011. And it goes... It goes through Barack Obama's birth certificate as posted on the White House website, and he'd never seen this. I remember seeing it when it first came out, because remember the White House said they posted the final long-term birth certificate. And there are a lot of people that have analyzed it, and you can go to the White House there, you can look it up, you can download it, and if you have Adobe Illustrator, their image manipulation software, you can look it up, and there are many layers in there. Anyway, a huge conversation ensued about, you know, I don't, you know, one of them was the person, I don't care, you know, I don't care whether it's false or not, doesn't matter, anybody's better than this and that. And in the long run, all my friend, I know Mr. Logic very well, had said is there's a document that's been posted by the White House that appears to be doctored, not an original document. Now, why it's been left there, I don't know. But he said nothing more, nothing less. You would not believe the back and forth that occupied 2 hours of this radio show, all of which was added by the listeners. Nothing wrong with that. We all do that. But what does it take to listen critically to what's being said and what's being discussed. Somehow we get mesmerized in what I call the details of the situations and examples. And we'll use an example to give a sense of what we're talking about. And before you know it, we're talking about the examples and not the issue. I say anyone wants to call in on that, 619-639-4724. See, another one along that lines that I'm fascinated by happens to be this whole issue that's come about since we've gone into this recession. You know, that really started in somewhere around 2008 and continues till today. At which particular point in time, what a new term was coined, the 1%. And we started to get a lot of stuff out there about the term income inequality. Now, you know, there is income inequality. There are people that make a lot more income than other people. And it's like that across the scale. And the thing that always bothered me about it is if that really made a difference, if that was really the origin of all our problems outside of the recession we went into, then how come we didn't see the problems manifest before the hitting of the whole recession? I mean, it's an easy way to explain everything going wrong, everything not working, you know, the poor are being trod upon by the rich. And by the way, I don't know if I've talked about this very much, but when you get to the whole issue of the top 1%, you really need to start getting in the top hundreds of a percent, thousandth of a percent to talk about where the real huge income gap comes from. Because a lot of the people in your top 1% of the income earners happen to be your professional people that are paid well, but they also have a lot of bills. But we seem to want to jump on things as they come up and stitch together stories fully understanding it. One of the things I came to a conclusion on in terms of the income gap, the income inequality people talk about, is that up to a certain point of income, you have a base level income that determines your abilities to survive. There's a base amount that everyone needs to be able to make to put a roof over their head, put food on the table, you know, clothe their families, you know, take care of the basic stuff. Once you get above that, you start to get in the realm of savings. If you go beyond that, you start to get into kind of slush money. In the words of government, it would be general fund money. Kind of mad money. Money you can kind of do anything you want with. You can use it for entertainment. You can go to concerts. You can go to shows. You can buy records. You can buy jewelry, whatever you want to do. And when you get into that realm, as long as people wind up with an acceptable amount, they got money in the bank, really, how much does it affect you or me that pro football players out there are making millions of dollars? In fact, we pay for them to make that. Or their actors make millions of dollars. Why is it that our focus always goes just to certain classes of people? And if they made less, would anyone else be doing better? I'm interested in the structure of our psychology that has us see the world the way we do, report on it in an absolute sense with a zealotry that follows us, and yet at the same time never, in fact, question our premises. Like I say, this goes back to the old my regular radio days. I actually like to keep putting out the number in case someone's out there did want to call in on it. It's 619-639-4724. See, we have the same kind of notion in our understanding, in my opinion. And I'm going to make a disclaimer for the show so I can just hit the button and say it. The opinions expressed on this show are mine and mine alone, you know. And they only reflect my opinions, and they're only as good as the research I've done to come up with the conclusions I have. And I'm amenable and ready to be challenged by anyone at any particular point in time and have my eyes open about something that I don't understand. So anyway, we're in an election season. And last week we had the presidential debate. Now, as I watched the debate, and there's a lot of opinions on it. And there's a lot of commentary on it. I'm not going to comment on the debate so much, but the thought that crosses my mind every day in this nation of ours is really, is there anybody that we could elect that can pull our bacon out of the fire? Is there anyone that can turn this particular thing around? I know the unemployment numbers this week came out, said we're 7.8. We just got under the 8%. But I haven't gone back through them because they're always monkeying with those numbers, and they mess around with them, and there are people that have just stopped looking for jobs that don't get included in the numbers, and there are, you know, part-time workers and all that stuff. And, you know, as they say, you know, figures lie and liars figure. So I'm not particularly surprised that just prior to an election, the Bureau of Labor Statistics would come up with an unemployment number that got under 8%. And I'm not saying that's not legitimate. I just don't know. But the question is I don't know if there's anyone that could really pull us out over this next 4 years. I know if you take the time to look up the information and the data that's available from the White House numbers, the CBOs, all these people keep the statistics, we're looking at budget deficits, which in fact turn into debt, of, I think, roughly $1.2 to $1.5 trillion a year for the next 4 years. So let's say that Mr. Romney does get elected and steps in. What we all know, if we remember any of our civics we studied, is it's actually Congress that writes up the budget. And the fact that we're spending $3.5 trillion right now means that someone's got their eyes out there on spending that money. So President certainly submits a budget and they do that, but Congress actually has the purse strings. See, I have a sense that you and I are caught in the middle. We're the ones that are being played as the suckers, as they point to the other guys doing the bad things to the nation to keep us all stirred up out here, while in fact the rest of the world goes on. And if you're in the state of California, I don't know how it is in the rest of the states, all of a sudden you wake up the next day and you find out the price of gallon overnight has jumped 60 cents a gallon. Now, California is a fairly spread out state. People rely on their cars a lot to get to and where they're going and to get to their work. That's a huge jump. In my area, the gasoline's going for about $4.60 a gallon. And I think that I'd heard earlier that we might actually have Hawaii beat. So we're all out here fighting, talking about who's going to be, you know, which one can turn the country around. I don't know if anyone can. Certainly in 4 years. And do we have, you know, is it unrealistic of us to expect that there is someone out there that can do this? Or should we tell a more realistic picture and recognize that actually, in many respects, we are part of the problem in the country in which we live? And the extent we can hold our elected officials, a very old conversation for me, accountable, we'll never get this country back on track. I don't think we're going to have a big savior. I don't care which way the election goes, whether Barack Obama's voted back in or Mitt Romney wins the thing. I think we got systemic problems that transcend either of them. I think they're fueled by a certain ignorance that we as a public have and continue to immerse ourselves in as we, in fact, buy the rhetoric that's put out there that, in fact, separates us, keeps us apart, keeps us at each other's throats. The zealotry of both sides of the political discussion. The part that doesn't allow us to have civil conversations surrounding issues that are like the example I gave at the beginning of the show, opinions. Because we fail to see them as opinions, we see them as facts, and after all, my facts are unassailable, and we very nonchalantly tell our other fellow humans how full of shit they are because they don't know what's going on. See, I really wonder, you know, I go back to the show this afternoon, it was a great show, had young people on, and had an older person on, and it is talking about this, the polyamorous relationships. And one of the things that came out of that that was absolutely phenomenal for me is watching two different sets of people express their points of view on the issue, and in some ways never quite communicating how they saw it, having the words filtered from one side to another through their listening, such that what was meant to be, in fact, communicated wasn't. Anyway, that's certainly one topic we can talk about that I've talked about in detail. That's the zealotry. Another thing I had down here that I'm also fascinated by, and it ties into this polyamorous thing, but not from the aspect of polyamorous relationships, but it has to do with this whole notion of wisdom. And wisdom necessarily or not coming from age. I happen to have a friend there again on Facebook. Very interesting character. He's probably in his, I believe he's in his 40s someplace. But he's spent his whole life engaging in the martial arts. And one day about a year ago, he brought up a show that I think that they had on the History Channel where two guys went around the world together, and they would try on all these different martial art styles and see if they could master them and have fights and stuff. But we got talking, and I don't know if you know anyone that in fact is a martial artist. And what's interesting, I just recognized something. My opening thing had to do with someone that's committed to lifestyle. That happens to be veganism in the beginning. The example I gave you of the James Cameron thing. On the other hand, there's this whole group of people that are in the martial arts thing, and it becomes a way of life. And I just realized, rarely have I found a martial artist that's a zealot about it, demands that you, in fact, need to rearrange your life to come from that point of view. Restricted, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, John. You?
Okay. I was listening, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and especially when it comes to zealotry. First of all, I agree that, you know, in every case you need to look at both sides of the issue. But I think with zealotry, especially when it comes to personal choice, I think people should mind their own damn business. You know, I mean, not that they can't have an opinion about what's good or bad in life, or good or bad for them. But, you know, they do have a tendency to, in personal issues, try to proselytize or convert you into, or shame you in some sort of way into their belief system. And I think that that's where, as far as zealots are concerned, where the annoyance comes in. I think there has to be some sort of line. I've been sitting here pondering it. Between that and other issues, although both, you know, looking at both sides of the coin is always important, but there are other things that involve all of us. And I think that we can't be, and I'm not saying you are, but I'm just saying we can't be mamby-pamby when it comes to things that are important, although we do need to have, you know, as much factual information as we can. But when you get into, you know, so these type of zealotries of veganism or smoking or religion or anything like that, these are personal issues that people you know, really, I mean, again, James Cameron can have any kind of opinion he wants, but if he's trying to push that on me, he really doesn't have the right to. And but that's different than if we were talking about something that affects us all.
Yeah,
you follow where I'm going. Yeah.
What you just said, part of it is contained in one of my favorite sayings, and that is half-assed, still half-assed. Which cheek you got left? You know, you're absolutely right. Just because someone's able to entertain thoughts that they don't particularly agree with, Aristotle said, and that is part of an educated man, the other side of that doesn't mean you need to be a namby-pamby and fold.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think truly the other mark of stalwart, valuable human being is someone that can, with a gentleness and ferocity at once, defend their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Can actually step off their position, if you will, and defend their point of view. Now, by the way, I'm not going to say that I did it very well, but I listen to what and I'm not even going to say I'm the best listener, but one of the things I've found is you do it long enough. See, we listen in certain ways, and listening is probably one of the most underappreciated things that we do because we take it for granted. See, any good salesman knows this. Any good salesman know how people listen. Any good politician know how people listen. That's how tailor what they're going to say. So when you start to know how people listen, see, my comment at the beginning here, I said, was, you know, Cameron's statements about moral choice beyond are his opinions, all of which he's entitled to, but none of which are necessarily true. I didn't say he's wrong. I know whoever posted this thing, that in the way they're going to hear me, because that's the way they hear someone else, not a vegan, not vegetarian, is that person jumped out there and they don't know what they're going to talk about, and they're going to tell me it's right to eat meat. So I can in listening to him, I can do a dance in the conversation with him back and forth and lead him to a point that we can in fact get to a point that I think is incredibly important. The realms of opinions. Everyone's got a right to them. And they're not really true. So you're absolutely right, is we don't need to give, I'm not hearing anything I'm saying is saying that we need to give up what we strongly believe in or we're committed to, or we need to fold, or, you know, we can't express ourselves. No. That's all I wanted to put out there, is one can, with courage and gentleness and tact, whatever you want to call it, literally act with others in such a way that maybe you can communicate and get your point across there if you start to see how the other person relates to what you have to say.
Well, I agree with that. I think I'm going a little bit, I'm pondering a little bit further, and I'll take two examples. I mean, if you take veganism, for instance, one can make the statement that you were talking about before about, you know, animals, but you can also make statements about, you know, eating, not having protein, which you were talking about, and we wouldn't have advanced as much. We've also seen studies done on the necessity of proteins for human being, and you're still taking life away from the planet. You can get into the either or there, and that becomes a personal choice. Now, that aside, when you talked about Obama before, now I know that your friend did not make a specific reference to Obama not being a native citizen, but the assumption was there of the people who called in, and then you get into a certain set of facts, which is a citizenship through your parents, which is a citizenship. So whether his birth certificate looked, you know, I mean, this has been gone over so many times that people, the minute they hear Obama's birth certificate isn't real, they immediately jump to the conclusion that, you know, we're going to get into this ridiculous argument again. And the argument becomes ridiculous factually because there is citizenship through your parents from the 1934 law. So factually speaking, if a parent of yours is born in this country, you are a citizen, and therefore the whole birther issue is moot. That doesn't become an opinion as much as it becomes a fact. So when you take vegans and...
Let me interrupt this on the document, then. The problem is it's such a charged issue that people that it becomes very hard when someone says something's not right here. I'm not saying anything about whether the president's a citizen or not. That's not the issue. Why do we have the White House not only posting a doctored document, but doing something so sloppily?
Well, I'm
not cleaning it up. What are the implications there? I mean, but listen. Clearly, you could carry it one step further, and I know that there are people who could say this, and I said that to someone today. If you really wanted to push and you wanted to really open that old wound, which I'm not even going there, is someone can say, well, you know, if in fact there was something to that, at least whether we could undo anything that would happen in the past. You know, we could say something about the eligibility for president now, but I think that's too late. The point of the fact of the matter is I, you know, how stupid do people think we are? I mean, that's a real issue. When someone tells me they have put out an actual certified document that has problems, that's problematic like that, that was his point. See, it was old news to me when this came out. I knew about it in 2011. It hasn't been hidden. I downloaded the documents myself. I looked at them, and yeah, there's something problematic about it. You know, and I don't say it has anything to do with citizenship. I just don't know why there would be a document posted on the White House page that's full of layers. Now, someone called in and says, well, if you need to understand the software and it works and the way it works with things. And went on into an explanation is Adobe Acrobat is putting together what they call a public document, the PDF file format, is it tries to determine which parts of it are text, are you with me, and which parts of it are graphic, and in dealing with those, tries to handle them in such a way so that if you need to go back and deal with the document later, you know, you have the ability to edit it and all that. Now, that made sense, you know, okay. I got it. No one ever stopped to think about that. It had to do in the conversion to the PDF file. And so, of course, my mind thinks is that's a legitimate explanation as to why it is. Mm-hmm. Rather than everyone saying it doesn't make a difference, it's not this or that, is I'm going, well, how come you got a document that's being presented and totally unrelated to his status, his birth status, you're being presented with something that you're being told is true and factual, when in fact it's a document comprised of 14 different layers that don't make sense? It would be easy to come out and say, hey, we just discovered that the example I told you, we never stopped to think about it when we put it there in this particular form. Now, you're not going to make everybody happy and quell them. But the point there, again, has nothing to do about the relationship of the document to the president. It has to do with where people went off about a whole subject matter because they couldn't listen to what was being said. I sent in an email and said, you know, the whole point was, you know, is that in fact he has said none of the stuff that's being alleged. His whole point was very simple, mm-hmm. very, very simple. His point was, is I just became aware of this piece, right? And I'll read it to you. This is the problem with dialogues of this kind. That's why I talk so much about this, because until we can start to see the problematic nature of our conversations and speech, we will forever go around in circles, in many cases, about things we even agree on. All Mr. Logic has asserted is that the PDF document proffered by the White House as a copy of Barack Obama's original long-form birth certificate appears to be doctored. He said nothing about the president's citizenship. He's also made no speculation regarding why the White House would publish such a document.
Mm. Well, we know the reason the White House published the document, and I think I agree with what you're saying. They didn't listen to the man's statement, and when you had first said it, I understand, you know, exactly what you're talking about. But I think the assumption is, because of all of the hoo-ha that has been made on this, and the only purpose for bringing up whether the president's a birth certificate is whether he's an illegal alien from Kenya, gets their skin up, okay? And again, we come back to the factual statement of acquisition of citizenship, which is if your parents are born here, either one of them, you are a citizen of the United States, which makes the whole point moot to begin with, and why we would be even be discussing it gets people riled. So the minute your friend started
you need to understand this person. He, you know, this person is a programmer. He, you know, he is one of the most apolitical people that I've seen. He's
I'm not indicting him. I'm just
I know you're not, but look at, see, that's what I keep trying to get at. The layers of baggage that get attached to issues that we deal with on a regular basis, to the point that we don't really see them, and to the point that everything you just told me was your story regarding what gets attached when some, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. And I'm not disagreeing with you, except in this case is that the issue was not about the president's status as a citizen or not. It happened to be a technological issue with a document that someone discovered. But we are so thrown to immediately adding stuff that we the baggage we've carried around for ages, and that we don't even see it, don't see through it. And so the conversation quickly drifts off point. Before you know it, we're off over the valley and down the dale or whatever to grandma's house we go.
I agree with that. I just think that if the point, you know, and I agree exactly with what you're saying, and they didn't listen to what he was saying, and that I do agree with. But I mean, we are attaching baggage to it because without the suspicious nature, that document wouldn't exist on the website to begin with, and we wouldn't even be having the conversation because we've never had the conversation before. But yet we have people who would try to malign another man's character with something that is completely false. So when a statement like that is made that can be looked at with innuendo, then people start to react, and you're right. They didn't listen to the statement and say, okay, well, maybe the because I can say to you, well, maybe there is something. Maybe they put the document up there wrong somehow, or they did a slipshod job of doing it. But, I mean, when you come down to why it's there to begin with, it becomes completely ridiculous. And my point goes to the difference between zealotry and again, those things that are factual. When somebody comes out and says, well, the president wasn't born in this country, it's like, what are you talking about? Go and read the immigration status, and you'll understand acquisition of citizenship, and then we don't have a conversation anymore.
But see, John, I keep trying to get you to see with me, and not that you're
wrong. No, I understand what you're saying.
Well, I think you're. Let me try it once more. Okay. What you're saying would be totally legitimate, and I understand it. Except where it's problematic, it raises another issue that's in fact problematic. This is an error. I know why it was published on there, and people say, "Well, you know, if it hadn't been for all of this nonsense out there, it wouldn't have been published in the first place." Okay, but the question is why hasn't a mistake that's been known of for a year and a half, 2 years, been rectified so it's no longer an issue? What's being done to keep this in place? And that's a legitimate question. Listen, this came out in 2011, whatever. And like I say, I heard explanations today for why the document has the layers and all that. What a simple thing it would be to put out, it has come to our attention that what was put on there, blah, 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 you know. This is a reflection of whatever, and this has been corrected if it was sloppy on our part or whatever. It's like I worked with contractors for years, okay? There were two kinds. There were two kinds of contractors. The one that would say up front, when they made a mistake, oh, we've made a mistake here and this needs to be corrected and blah, blah, blah. And you moved on and it was done with. There was the other guy that would make a mistake and try and ignore it, sweep it under the carpet, slide on it and stuff. And then when it came to bear, it was nothing but an excuse about this, that, and whatever. And so I understand what you're saying. And I understand the baggage. What I'm saying is that this particular point, if you really press it further, is this is baggage that doesn't need to be around today. I mean, no one should have been able to go on the White House site and download that thing this week, and people were doing it all day long with the same thing in place. I know why it was put up there, because of all the other stuff. There was a mistake in what they put up there. I understood the one explanation, okay? That makes, in fact, sense. It seems to me that that would have been that's just sloppy. And we can make all sorts of comments about it, but it's just sloppy. It just seems like an exacerbated problem for whatever reason.
Yeah, no, I don't want you to misunderstand that I agree with you on that, but I guess where we're splitting hairs here, and I do understand your point, believe me, but I guess where we're splitting hairs here is if I came or someone came and maligned you, okay, and you gave them some sort of, you see, you're talking about you've worked for construction companies and correcting a mistake. That's fine if it's a legitimate mistake. But if someone came and maligned you and you gave them something, you know, half-assed and said, here's the truth of the matter. This is it, okay? This is what it is. This is so ridiculous that I'm not really going to even waste my time with this, you know. To talk about anything, the key factor is that you've been maligned for no reason, and that unfactually you're what they're saying is incorrect. So while I understand exactly what you're saying and your point of your friend made the statement, and he was just talking about a document, it could have been any document, and he's just talking about a document, I think where people would start to get upset in this particular case is the fact is, why is this here, and why are we talking about this to begin with? Why is there baggage associated to this to begin with? Why did this even happen when we clearly know acquisition of citizenship takes place, and therefore none of this should have ever been brought to the forefront to begin with? And therefore, there wouldn't be a sloppy document, which I give you. The document is sloppy, and that's what he was talking about specifically, and it has nothing to do with anything else, and he has a right, and he may have a very legitimate point. I haven't seen the document, and I do understand that. But still, I think a lot of people would look at it and say, you know, why is this even around? You know, why is this baggage here? Why has someone been maligned to begin with that someone had to put a document on a website to begin with? You see what I'm saying?
You can take this back to all manner of things. You can take it back. You can take it back to Rodney King. A lot of people said that had he not evaded the police arrest in the first place, been speeding through the streets of L.A. at 95 miles an hour, had he just stayed down before they take all this stuff, he wouldn't have exacerbated the problems.
Yeah, but then again, with Rodney King or something of that, you have two sides to a story. Yeah, but we're not talking about something factual. I'm sorry, we're not talking about something factual there. We're talking about, you know, something that is, well, Rodney King did this and the police did this, and then you're talking about hearsay and opinion. When you're talking about citizenship of the United States, there are factual document, black letter law, that's a little bit different. You see,
I understand that, you know, there would have been, okay, very clearly so, if someone had not started to cast aspersions.
Right.
On the president's citizenship,
mm-hmm.
this would have all been, in fact, moot.
Yeah, I mean, and correctly cast aspersions, not opinion of, well, we say Obama's here, you know, in the country legally.
Fine. Had they not incorrectly cast aspersions
right
on the president, this would have never come to
right
the point that it has, okay?
And on the other hand, you're absolutely right about the document. I'm not saying you're wrong. It could have been any document. Your friend could have been critiquing any document, you know, and people jumped on it for the wrong reason. I understand your point.
Let's get rid of the president for right now. It's much like for me, and it's a slightly different example. It goes back to the days of Bill Clinton and Trist in the White House with Monica, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would hear over and over and over again, you know, we wouldn't have a problem. They were just out to get him. And I'm sitting there chuckling to myself, of course they were. This was not unknown that people were out to get Bill Clinton. It was like Gary Hart, you know, throwing down the gauntlet to the press. Catch me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, of course, you know, if someone's out to get you, that's when it behooves you to be on your best behavior, at least, you know, kind of watch your path. You don't, you know, if you're walking in a minefield, you don't go whistling, skipping, and dancing. And that certainly, you know, that's certainly a justification, an excuse, and a reason someone can proffer to diffuse or fog the issue. But the fact of the matter is he got caught. Bill's case, he got caught almost with his pants down. Not literally. We don't have any pictures of that. But, you know... That's all I'm saying. And part of the reason, the thing is, you're absolutely right. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. If inappropriate aspersions had not been cast on the president, then none of this would have been an issue. Wouldn't have been up there anyway. Given the fact that it was, though, is, you know, give me a break. See, the whole point that people pointed out is all you would have had to do is scan the document on a scanner, and there would have been no, and you would have just had a clean copy, done with it. Here it is. Here's the copy. This is the proof you're asking for. We're done. We're tired of it. And you would have avoided creating another problem. And I understand all the other stuff that got us here. Then the question is, what do we do when we get here and get out? It was one of the problems I always had with Iraq. I was not happy about going into Iraq. I, you know, I think that those things are problematic, you know. But by the same token, the crazy nature of politics and ourselves are such that everyone says, oh, Bush has just finished the job his daddy started and didn't do a right thing of. Well, when the first Bush went in there, everyone says, you just watch. He's going in for the oil, and he's going to go straight to bed and on and on and on. He went in with the mission and stopped, right? And he says, no, I'm not. I've got a very clear, defined mission. I'm going to, you know, freak, wait. We're going to pull out. And no, we know what you're up to, ulterior motives. He did what he said, only to come back and haunt his son later. And I'm not saying his son was a good president, in the fact that if your dad had done it right the first time, you can't win for losing with humanity.
Mm. Yeah.
You know,
well,
the first... You know, Papa Bush said, no, I have no intention of doing anything other than freeing Kuwait. And people were just damn sure he's going to go further. You know, Bill Clinton in Bosnia, right? I was out there with all the rest of, you know, I really believe that we would have these incredibly high casualty rates. You know, I, you know, reminiscent of Vietnam and everything. I stand corrected. You know, we were very fortunate there. You know, when 9/11, the building came down, you know, that morning I woke up, I was just sure they're going to have 50,000 people dead or something like that. And we, you know, what, 2,000-3,000 people died there. That, you know, that's a lot of people. But not anywhere near what I thought it was going to be, in my opinions or speculations, are no better or any worse than anyone else's.
Well, I think in my mind, and to the broader issue, is when we're speaking of zealots, which I totally agree with you, the opinions of an individual or even the thesis that's based on some sort of factual process, but it's still thesis because, you know, they're expounding upon it. And especially where it becomes an individual or private matter. No one has a right, you know, I mean, we should listen to one another, but no one has a right to really tell you how to live your life. Then we have the other side of the coin, which is where there's something factual that is that within itself, without any kind of thesis or theory, states a certain thing. Okay, this has happened. This bullet has penetrated here, and ballistically it links up to this, and that is the fact. No, it's not. It's not the fact, because I don't want it to be. That becomes different than zealotry. I guess that's when I'm trying to
very
to,
excellent point. You're if I just heard you right, you're saying that there is a clear distinction between certain things that are factually true and certain things that are promoted in a zealous fashion as being true when they're not, when they're matter of opinion. As you
or
said,
they have some factual basis which thesis is put on top of. You know, yes, well, smoking is bad for you, but it will kill you. Well, who says that? Show me that. I mean, that doesn't necessarily pan itself out. It's bad for you. It can create problems. We understand all those things. But to take it to the point of saying it's cyanide is wrong. I mean, that's just factually incorrect, but that's someone's theory on top of the facts that they have. They're expounding it out that far and has, in cases, been true. But it's not an absolute.
There are people that have died that as lung cancer that don't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Never been exposed to secondhand smoke, even. And
right.
There are people that have smoked all their lives. You know, into their not. Who? Where was that one? Was it a grandmother or old lady or old guy lived to be 100? No, old guy lived to be 110. Smoked a cigar every day and drank his whiskey. You know, neither of which. Each of which are anecdotal examples to prove a point that's a meaningless statement or point.
Right.
So you and I are absolutely, and that's what the whole conversation or dialogue is about. That's what the original comment of mine was to this guy is, I had a friend that had made the comment when someone's talked about eating animals. He says, we eat animals because we can't. So when Cameron said that, is it's not a requirement to eat animals, we just choose to do it in terms of my experience with one person, and that could even be opinion. But at least I had some foundation or basis of someone else that said that's why we ate them, so I was willing to, and that's what I said, kind of what such and such says, we eat animals because we can, right? But then I went on to say that the rest is definitely opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it might be justified on fact. There's certain things on there. But, you know, like I say, I looked up later because it's fascinating to me when someone says, well, eating meat's unhealthy. I've spent so much time in the last couple of months because I know a lot of people have gone on a variety of vegan diets and stuff. And even though I know that many things are problematic, I rarely dismiss something out of hand. Even if I've studied it before, I'll go back and look up, you know, stuff that I've looked up before, and I learn even more. So, did you know, by the way, when they've done some of the recent studies on vegetarian diets, vegan diets, that maybe they're part of the war on women, John, because you know that one of the things I seem to find is women on vegan diets tend to have higher rates of ovarian cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? You think the vegans are out to wage war on women? That's my whole point, you know, is like the moth to the flame.
Right.
We get sidetracked and go down, you know, we get distracted from what Jack Webb used to say, the facts, man, nothing but the facts.
Right. That is true, and you can on the vegan argument. You know, when they came out with Atkins years ago, when Atkins came out with his diet, oh my God, the dietitians went nuts. This can't work. It's not possible. It's bad. It's terrible for you. It's horrible. All this protein. You know, they've done studies on it, and you were just talking about ovarian cancer and cancers in general. They've done studies on it and saying that high protein diets lead to a healthier lifestyle in a lot of different ways. So I'm not saying that again. That's not an absolute, but there are positives to, you know, a very low restricted carbohydrate diet, which if you're on a vegan diet, you're on a very high carb diet. So, I mean, you can look at this, you know, again, you can put your thesis on top of either one of these things and create some sort of zealotry if you want to, but it doesn't make it factual. It makes, you may have some points there that are factual, but it doesn't make the totality of your statement factual, you know. So,
well,
I mean,
you know, and it's like fructose is fruit sugar, right?
Yeah.
And I understand is if you eat any kind of sugar in food where it's bound to something else with it, it's probably going to be absorbed less quickly. But, you know, I see people going nuts and telling me that fructose and fruit, it is totally different, and chemically it's not. It really isn't. I listen to all the talks, but yet we tend to get on these these zealotry kicks, and we can't let go. But there again, anyone out there listening to me, by the way, my name's Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. VQ. Listen, it's just all my opinion. I know there are people out there that will say that I'm full of it. And I might be, but, you know, I spend a lot of time trying to find out what we do and don't know about things. And, you know, one of the wives' tales, one of the things that I recently found, and it was one that you grew up, is that coffee and caffeine is a diuretic, right?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? Have you heard that?
Yeah. Sure.
Huh?
Yeah.
And so I don't know what it was. It was someone close to me. I think it was my nephew. It wrote something one time and says, "Boy, I like my caffeine. I wish it wasn't such a diuretic, you know, or something like that." And you know what I did? It's just something that's become more and more of an integral part of my makeup. I says, "You know, I've been taught that my whole life, and I've always believed it. You know, I wonder if there's any research on it." And I started searching. And in about 1998, 2000, someone started to do some research on it. And you know what they found?
No.
They found that coffee and caffeine had about the same diuretic effect as water.
Okay.
And what they did, and for anyone that's interested in the kind of study that was done, is they said, okay, you wake up in the morning, you're going to do the study, and what we want to do is we want to measure what you put down the old pipes and drink in there, and how much you pee out, right?
Yeah.
And if you start peeing out more than you're taking in, it's a diuretic effect. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you just pee out the same, well, then it doesn't dehydrate you, and it's not a diuretic in that fashion. They found out that for the most part, they couldn't tell any difference. But most doctors will tell you that today, you know, it's a diuretic and make you pee it all out. Most of them haven't even read the study, and it's not that it matters. It's that important. But it makes me chuckle. It makes me say, what else do I know to be factual? If I accepted this fact, that maybe I should look into. If nothing else, out of curiosity, and science turns around. Every time you turn around, especially in this day and age, you got a new study for something else that tells you that what was bad is not so bad. Eggs is another one right now. They're saying that the cholesterol in eggs, you know, the low-density cholesterols, eggs are not, if I had this right, I can be corrected on it, are not as bad as people thought. You want to know why? Because it has to be a low-density cholesterol that has the habit of picking up the other low-density cholesterols in the system along the way, forming bigger high-density cholesterols so they don't stick to the size of your arteries. But for years, eggs was given a bad rap.
Yeah. And, you know, I think with a lot of these things, you know, George Carlin once said, and I, you know, to relate this to this whole, to my point here, you know, if you eat beef jerky on Sunday and you think it's a sin, it is. And I have a feeling that the psychological effect on human beings of what they believe to be, especially when it comes to a lot of this kind of stuff. It does become actually, it possibly could become harmful to them because they're taking this as being true. Is what they believe to be. I wonder if the vegan who you were talking to, if he were to eat meat, if it wouldn't seriously be damaging to him because he actually has such a belief system in place that it would be that maybe he would make it so within himself. You know, so I often look at things like that. I think that these kind of things are very detrimental because we put things out as absolutes and based on hypothesis and thesis, with very little fact, and then we say this is absolutely so, and you got to wonder what kind of psychological effect that has on someone, because if they believe it to be so, that the mind is capable of doing a lot more than we know.
You're actually one of those self-fulfilling prophecy things. You believe it's bad mm-hmm. for you. That's why placebos work. To the extent that they do. Someone just mm-hmm. posted something here for me, and I don't have the study. Maybe I'll put it on tomorrow night. Is the caffeine is a diuretic? If it is. And it's on WebMD. I won't refute that. I would pull up the studies that were done. I think I saw it through the National Institute of Health, but it doesn't matter. We are very strange creatures. There's another one going out around today that I saw, and people put this stuff up. See, there's two things going on. I don't know if you ever do things like Facebook. Stay away from Facebook, folks, unless you want to have a lot of fun and see what kinds of nutty things we all think in the world. But it had to do with once you cut an onion open, if you don't eat it right away, you must throw it away because it will make you sick and could kill you because onions are bacteria sponges and it goes through this whole thing. Well, I've been eating onions for years. And it says even if you seal it up in a plastic baggie and put it in the refrigerator, it's not safe. And I'm going, wow. If that's the case, I should have been dead a long time ago because that's what
I always
do with my onions. Well, it turns out if you do a search on it, this thing's been going around for a long time on Snopes, and it's been discredited there. Not that Snopes is necessarily 100% accurate on everything, but we seem to be in an age where we seem to live in this weird admixture of voodoo as well. People put stuff together and they come to believe things. And as one of my very intelligent resident listeners here said one time, that what really makes truth for humans is agreement. Get enough people agreeing to it.
Yeah.
And then it becomes the truth.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and that's not true. Yeah.
Well, but it is crazy. We are... And our zealotry is a very interesting phenomenon. I often wonder about the origin of that. I've said it in conversations about God and atheism. If really either side were that certain of the truth or fact of it, why is it so necessary to prove it to someone else? I was a teaching assistant in freshman chemistry. I had a kid come up to me. We were studying quantum mechanics and the structure of the atom. And he asked me to explain it to him. I went through the whole thing, at the freshman level. He looked at me and said, "I don't believe that." Okay. I told him very literally, fine with me. There's no reason you have to believe it except for you probably should memorize those answers for the test because whether you believe it or not, you don't put that down on the test. You're going to get an F, and if you need to get into medical school and you're pre-med, that's not going to be very good because you got to pass introductory chemistry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you said someone put up on the site that coffee is a diuretic. Here again, coffee, from what I know of it, has certain diuretic properties to it. It doesn't necessarily mean that every time you take it, it's going to be a diuretic. I mean, so here you have a small kernel of factual information
Let me reread this. I might have misquoted what this person... Caffeine is a diuretic. It is also used in Mexico to treat cancer in a caffeine enema. I don't know if that's totally beyond what I know, but let me look at the WebMD link here, because it says some people believe that drinking caffeinated beverages will cause them to lose fluid, so they can't be counted as part of their daily intake, blah, blah. Some research has shown that caffeine intake can always affect our fluid balances. In one study, 12 caffeine customers were told to abstain from caffeine for 5 days, and then were given 742 milligrams of caffeine, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Another study, too much to study here. Okay, you know, listen, if someone wants to, I actually saw the data from the study that I'm quoting. I just don't have it in front of me. And I was fairly well convinced that it's not.
I'm not saying you're wrong.
Saying to the listener here.
Yeah, I'm just saying that there's a kernel of truth there, and that's been taken to, it's been expanded out. I've heard people say the same thing about vitamin C. Vitamin C is a diuretic. If you take too much of it, it's a diuretic. Well, you want to know something? In the first 5 days you take vitamin C, it's going to be a diuretic, man, because your body's not used to taking it. But if you start taking that same kind of amount of vitamin C on a continual basis, it's not a diuretic anymore because your body gets used to having it there. So it has certain properties that can be used that way, but, I mean, it doesn't make it ultimately so. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't mean everybody who takes vitamin C at 2,000 milligrams or 2 grams of vitamin C, you know, every time they take it, it's going to have a diuretic effect. That's not true.
I heard it had a laxative effect. But
diuretic effect, yeah.
You know, in either event, I have been known to take 6 grams, 6 to 9 grams a day when I have it's never done that to me. Doesn't mean that it won't do it to someone else. Every one of our systems is a little bit different.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw another one on the table here, too. Why don't you wrap that up with me, and we'll go on to another one here.
Yeah, no, I was just saying there's those small, I mean, they may have certain, you know, kernels of truth, certain properties within them like coffee or vitamin C or whatever that have that, but that doesn't take it to the ultimate extreme and mean that in every single case that it's going to work out that way, because when the body adjusts to those things, I've heard that said about vitamin C. I'm sitting in health food stores, don't take too much of that, it's a diuretic, and I'm thinking to myself, take it for 5 days, it won't be a diuretic anymore, you know.
Yeah, one of the things they say, you know, drink too much alcohol, you get drunk, but they also say you drink a lot of alcohol regularly, your tolerance goes up, and you can pass the physiological tests even if you can't blow the balloon right. I've always thought that one was strange. I've done shows on this one. I've always been troubled by penalizing people for blood alcohol levels, because what it seems to me is really important is their mechanical ability to drive a car. And now I can hear people going nuts out there. I'm not saying that the intake of alcohol doesn't affect your ability to power drive a motor vehicle or affect your motor skills. They've certainly done research on that shows it does. That this being said, we have quite a wide range of tolerance for hindered motor skills when it comes to driving automobiles, because you know sleep affects your ability to handle an automobile. Old age, I mean, a lot of old people. I'm getting there, folks. You know, I won't complain when you come and take my license away. I might not like it. I might hide it, or maybe I'll get a duplicate copy. Just kidding. But you know what I mean? I had a neighbor who used to get in horrendous fights with his wife. And he'd jump out in his car, and he would peel out there laying rubber. And I'd think, man, that guy'd be a better driver if he had a couple drinks to mellow him out before he left. You know, not that that's true, folks. I'm not saying that that's the truth. But there is, you know, they say, you know, the person that's most likely to be affected the most, and this is not a justification for y'all to go out there and start drinking in the bars regularly, but it's a guy that drinks all the time, you know. The two beers just doesn't affect him as much.
Mm. Oh, yeah. If you've ever seen a function, if you've ever seen a functional alcoholic, you know it, man. Because I mean, you know, you see people, they can really put it away, and they, you know, they can just they can go out and do what they would normally do. It's like, you know, and again, I'm not suggesting that you should drive or do that, but I've known people like that, and it's just like, that's amazing. You know,
yeah.
I mean, to me, I couldn't do it because my body, I guess, is different, and the way I view things is different. But that just amazes you. You know, I mean, it's just like you're drinking scotch straight, and you put five scotches down. You know, I can imagine where I would be, but they're walking around as sober as daylight. You know, I mean,
they can count all the fingers, finger to the nose. You know, 1 foot up in the air.
Yeah.
And you, one of the ones I always liked was the one balance on one foot and put a finger in your nose or something like that. I know people who can't do that sober. In fact,
right.
I have a crazy story. When I was younger, I had a friend of mine that should not have been out driving on his motorcycle, and he took another friend. They're riding together, and he got pulled over. And the officer says, do the ABCs. And he goes, ABCD, fuck it, I'm drunk, take me away. And then he looked in horror as the officer started to ask the other friend on the back of the motorcycle, who was every bit as tuned up as he was, if he was sober enough to drive. And the guy says, yeah. And so he says, well, do this. I can't remember what the mechanical skill test was. And he kind of wavered a little bit, and this guy has got one of the most gutsiest guys I ever knew. He looked right at him when he flubbed it, and the cops started to get on him. He says, well, you do it. And the cop took him up on it, and he stumbled. And my friend watched in horror as this equally messed up friend drove off with his motorcycle, and they took him to jail.
Oh, God.
Listen, I want to get into to another story here too, and this is not particularly about zealotry, but this is about orders of magnitude and scale. Okay, you'll see in a second why I want to do this. Anyway, I've got this very bright friend that's been a guest on mine on BTR before, and he says I love Reddit. And I love PBS. I mean, come on, it's the home of Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers. So when one of the candidates says, I'm going to stop the subsidy to PBS, I default to the wisdom of Mr. Rogers, and he's got a picture of Mr. Rogers, which gives both barrel middle fingers to the camera, right?
Yeah.
Which is a cute thing, but I got thinking about this. So I got thinking, you know, we are in a time where we've so overspent in our budgets and the money we spend at the federal level and the state level, the states are going broke, that I want, you know, that I understand people wanting to cut back. I appreciate this guy's point of view. I think that Romney was an idiot to say anything like that. I mean, he could have said anything. He could have said there are lots of programs at the federal level, you know, large or small as they may be, that we need to look at and we could cut. But, you know, you're goring a very sacred ox there when you say that one. But I decided to look up and see what funding of PBS ran. And I ran into one of the things that they, in fact, said. And what it was is it's on the realm of 250 to $300 million. I think it was $350 million a year. $310 million a year in the place I saw it. Now, here's what I want to say about orders of magnitude and scale, and that means how big it is, it big enough to be significant. Is, see, I'm kind of offended at us as a public and politicians as politicians that they would take advantage of our ignorance of scale of numbers to even deal with stuff like that. Because in a country that's running and spending $3.5 trillion, that amounts to about a dollar's worth of spending for every $10,000 we spend. It shouldn't be an issue. Do you understand what I'm saying? Above and beyond, the guy, you know, that's just a politically dumb thing to say. Politically dumb, you know, and to pick on that. But it's how our politicians get away with saying things that milk our emotions, because we are unable to put factual information into a meaningful context. It's like the penny wise, pound foolish argument.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that anyone, the fact that PBS would even have a problem. You know, he came back and he says, well, it's more like $450 million a year. And I'm going, I rest my case, same different. There are actors and groups of actors and Jimmy Buffett and Bill Gates, you know, in the private sector, there's that enough money to come up with $400 million. And I'm not saying $400 million isn't a lot of money, folks. But in with respect to what we spend, you can't tell me that we can't find a dollar someplace out of all our spending to go to something like PBS, as valuable as it is. But it's troubling to me that we they used to say that about Bill Clinton. It always used to drive me nuts. That's there. They talk about his use of Air Force One to fly here and there. He could have done a flight on Air Force One every day of the year for his 4 years in office and never even shown up on the scale of national spending.
Mm-hmm.
And that's troubling to me. It's like we're stuck in a mentality that I remember when I was in grade school as a kid, where the teacher said, you know, is a million such a big number that you couldn't count to it in a lifetime? Or, you know, and all these things they tell you to give you a sense of big numbers, but we never got back that, past that. We never transcended it. So people's eyes just glaze over when you start talking money and dollar amounts.
I agree with you. And I think the reason he ended up saying that was because in his mind he must have realized that that was going to be cute and get play and without actually turning and talking about something that was going to ultimately offend someone, because as much as they've made of the Big Bird killing off Big Bird and the whole thing, it turns out that corporate America puts a lot of money into PBS and especially into Sesame Street, and that people were going to look at that as being more cutesy than anything, because that's what they've done. It's been the silly thing, you know, of Romney.
Except
talking
they have,
about.
They have gone after it tooth and nail, I think. Let's bring Jackie into this. Jackie, you're on BTR with Vernon, and John tonight.
Hello. I wanted to say, I think he just really said that to get a rise, but why he always want to take stuff from poor people? Poor people don't have anything, and when you look at the amount, I heard it was $445 million that they spend on PBS, the federal government, which is like everybody's federal income dollars. Couldn't he think of something else from?
That is just foot and mouth. That's head up ass to say something like that, as far as I'm concerned, Jackie. And the reason it plays, it's there again, a larger issue to me is the reason it plays, because we have a public out here that doesn't understand that the amount of money spent on something like PBS, and even at that particular one, the president did it in another area, and that had to do with federal spending on education. Federal spending on education is trite. Most of that comes from the states. But it's playing our ignorance and inability to deal with big numbers. And so,
I agree.
And I agree.
That's why I'm thinking that I think it was the other day. I can't remember. For some reason, I really do believe it was $82 billion. But it was either $82 million or $82 billion that we gave to Israel. Now, I'm like thinking, what part of the public, I mean, like ordinary working American people, would understand why we need to give money to Israel besides being on the side outside of Israel because of religion. I mean, like, take religion out. Why do we need to give Israel money?
Well, I think the arguments for Israel, and I am not justifying it or saying that that's right, and you've got a good point, but is the answer that people would give you, the politician would probably give you, is Israel is one of the few countries in that region of the world that's important to the United States, that is pro-United States and gives us a base of operation from a military standpoint, and they would go on. If I was going to try and defend it, I would make a comment that at least military spending is one of the things that was originally mandated under the Constitution. Now, whether we should or shouldn't, well, I would go one step further and say there again is to talk about cutting $445 million, even $500 million or $600 million. As I said to my friend, is I'm used to doing back-of-the-envelope calculations. You're talking about amounts that are just meaningless. I mean, that's equivalent to – that's a smaller amount than if you had 20 bucks in your wallet and a penny fell out. You probably wouldn't notice the difference. I think I got that right. Right, John?
What's more important? We pay this country to be friends with us, or we give a little bit, because that's like, you think $82 billion to $445 million?
Yeah, you know, absolutely, to even say something like that. See, and I think that, see, Romney's cutesy thing was about the Big Bird part, John, but he was serious about using PBS as an example of a program that government shouldn't be funding, and he'd be looking at all this, and I think it was an incredibly stupid thing to say.
Well, I think the reason he did that was because he's trying to cover up the reality, and he keeps trying to cover up the reality that he wants to put the Bush tax cuts back into place, okay? And he keeps on saying, I'm not going to raise rich people, I'm not going to lower rich people's taxes. What he wants to do is take the sunset clause that is due to happen with the Bush tax cuts that Republicans put into the program and turn it around and put it back into place. And if he puts it back into place, he's going to have to do an awful lot of cutting according to any study out there, and he says there's studies where he can be revenue neutral. Even the studies that he puts out that are on his side that are revenue neutral take into account cuts that he himself has said he's not willing to make. So when
but
he
that
does
was
the
part
big...
of the opening of my show too there again is what I said is can anyone really do it when you look at the fact that it is no accident that the projected budgets Obama's projected budgets over the next 4 years are roughly $3.5 trillion. And the question I ask is there's a reason that it's been projected at that much, and for anyone to say that they can come in and cut that kind of spending, you know, any substantive amount just doesn't add up to me.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Is there
a
reason those numbers are there?
Yeah, and there's the other thing that they keep talking about. They're going to create, you know, what's the figure? 12 million jobs, and you know that isn't going. You're not going to get over 3% in growth. You know, it's like a jogger who runs and runs too fast. You know, he eventually dies from something, you know, because he overexerts his body. You're not going to take a depression where you lose $19 trillion and you a worldwide situation to boot because everybody else is in pretty bad shape and then turn around within, you know, the next, you know, 3 to 4 years and get more than 3 to 3.5% growth. These people are talking like they're going to start creating 350,000 jobs a year, and isn't going to happen. It just isn't going to happen. What we need to do, from my humble opinion, is reinvest in the country, and that's what we should look who's better for that, and then, you know, get ourselves in a position, because we have 4 years now, about throwing these people out of office and retaking back this country and doing things differently, trying to get back to status quo and then do things differently by, you know, putting ourselves in a better position. But they're making statements that they can't possibly fulfill, and Romney's talking about, and Obama's 12 million jobs, you know, I can do that too. Yeah, he can't, And Romney's saying, well, we're 3% GDP growth. You know, that's anemic, and I'm going to do better. You're not going to do better than that. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. And it's not going to happen all over the world. We're going to grow at a very slow rate, and we've been growing at a very slow rate, because you don't lose $19 trillion, and you don't have a major housing depression, which, by the way, the Japanese went through, and it took them 20 years to get out of. You know, and you don't overnight, you don't just snap your fingers and wave a magic wand, and that changes. It doesn't. You know,
but you know, John,
time.
this is bad, and I want to get back to something that Jackie said that was actually absolutely brilliant. I want to make a comment. In my opinion, there, I'm not saying it's brilliant because I think it's brilliant. But I thought it was brilliant. But see, John and I are preaching to the choir for you people that just tuned in, because it all ultimately comes back to you and me when I think about it. Because when you listen to what politicians say, it's a reflection of what they think you'll buy and what they think you think and believe. And the fact that they can't tell us the truth about what's going on is a reflection of us as much as them. You know,
sure.
And that's what I'm saying is that we, which by the way, on a whole other aspect, I had some stuff up here, is when you talk about income inequalities and all that stuff, I think it's one of the things that I find problematic when that gets brought up now is because you're talking about things within a specific period of time and their relevance outside of a recession or depression are different. They would show up differently. What Jackie, what you said was, is why would they want to take away from poor people? And I would like to not put words in your mouth, but I would like to reframe that, if I will, and you tell me if it's acceptable. What I'd really like to put out there, and if I was going to put it out, is why would you want to take away something that has the possibility of elevating the poor in the country so they're better off and can become better citizens of the country because of the education they've got? Because PBS provides things that transcends just some of the goofy cartoons that are on television, and I might get in trouble for saying that one too. But do you understand what I'm saying?
That's really kind of like what you were saying about how they manipulate us. They don't give us a choice to see how much they spend on other things, but he'll throw that up. So you know the Google searches went up real high to see how much money they spend on PBS. But we need a list of every single thing our federal dollars is spent on and let us vote. But we can't do that because we're a republic.
Well, but that information's available. That information is pretty readily available where we spend our money because, like I say, I was interested in finding out what we spend on education, too, because that's always brought up is you want to cut education from the federal level. Now, whether it should or shouldn't be cut is certainly something that can be discussed, but the amounts of money that the federal government puts into education is small compared to the total amount of educational dollars spent. And as a result of doing that, I happen to find a breakdown of what we spend our money on. But there again, whether I do it or not is kind of irrelevant if there's only one, two, three of us looking that stuff up because we care or we're concerned. That's a statement of...
You're looking it up. As a citizen of the country, shouldn't you just like get that information in the mail or something?
That would be a good idea. How about... I think that you might possibly get part of it on your form for your income taxes, which, by the way, we live in a time of identity theft, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we hear a lot about identity theft. One of the things that has been a couple, I can't remember the last time I checked, but did you know that for a long time when they sent out your 1040 book for doing your taxes, right there under your name on the front mailing label was your Social Security number? Oh, so
not in my lifetime.
We live in a crazy, crazy world. Crazy times.
Well, I don't know. I've never seen that information on any tax form of every single thing that the federal government spends
from
the collection of federal income taxes.
Well, I know that they did it. Certainly in the early 2000s, I remember getting one of my tax forms and seeing it on there and laughing about it. Maybe they finally stopped the practice, but it certainly didn't make sense because in the early 2000s, people were also starting to get engaged in identity theft. It's gotten much, much worse since then. But
I'm just trying to figure out how could you hold your representatives responsible for stuff when the ordinary person doesn't even know what they're responsible, what they're supposed to be responding to.
Well, no, I agree. One of the things that I've said many times is ignorance of the law is no excuse. And I've always said, well, if that's the case, then they shouldn't have more than 100 laws on the books of that, because the older I get, the fewer laws I can remember.
That's why I don't like voting time, because there's always people registering people to vote, and they go and they vote party line. Half the people, they don't even know who they are, what they're supposed to do, and nobody educates you on a candidate or voting processes.
And the candidate tells you what they want you to hear. Here's a rough breakdown. This was from this is off a website the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and you can get this stuff on the White House page. But it's just one of the quick ones I came up with, and I usually look to see if it's consistent with other things I've looked at. Medicare, Medicaid is about 21% of what we spend money on. Social Security is about 20%. Some of these numbers seem outdated, because one of the ones that says for defense and international security assistance, 20%, seems to me that was up. Well, it says source of 2011. That's pretty recent. Safety net programs, 13%. We spend 6% on the debt. And then the remaining programs.
No,
benefits.
I mean a total breakdown, not a certain amount of percent. How many
well, you can
dollars
get that.
Exactly is?
You
what's
can get
the
that.
Name
it's pretty
each-
thick.
Program.
It's a pretty thick book. It'll keep you awake nights reading it for months.
But we should get this as a citizen. You should get it in the mail. I don't think you should have to go online and search for it. What if you're not a person that likes to search, or what if you have no idea how to go about searching something like that? Then your interest in it is lost much more quickly, and your opinion on it, or if you had to make a choice, it's going to be based off of what somebody told you rather than, but either way, if they send it to you in the mail or even the way you're looking at it online, it don't make it true.
No, but at some point in time, at some point you got to decide what you're going to accept as truth, fact, or whatever. Anyway, the only problem with mailing it to everyone is part of me says I wonder how many landfills would be filled with unread books. It's just like when they required them in California, I think, to label fast foods for nutritional value or caloric value, and then they found out that didn't make any difference because people couldn't add the calories on the sides of their orders. So if they ordered some fries and a burger and a Coke, you know, didn't pay any attention to any of it because they couldn't add.
Most people don't even know what a calorie is.
Well,
you know what a calorie is before you start counting them and worrying about them.
They're using way too much paper now as it is, man. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. You know, you get on these lists, you know, you get on these mailing lists, and people are sending you. My bank sends me offers to join my bank. Okay, I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I'm already a member of the bank. I've got your credit card. Well, here. You want our credit card? I've got your credit card, idiot. Why don't you cross-reference and figure it out and stop wasting this paper? Because it's just absolutely amazing the waste these people send. And going back to Jackie's point earlier about finding out candidates, you know, especially from a local standpoint in election, it's like pulling teeth, man. I mean, even on the internet, because during the primary, I went through it and I'm looking, you know, through the different candidates, and it's just like, it is very tough to get information about these people. And I mean, you really got to look, and if you want to know something truly about them other than just the surface stuff, you really got to dig. And that just shouldn't be like that. I mean, you know, you're vote, especially on a local level where you're voting for people in your own community, you should know everything about that person so that you can make that decision, everything about that judge that you're going to put on the bench. You know, I mean, it's absolutely insane. And this stuff, this is the kind of stuff that has got to stop. You know, people have to get involved in their own democracy. And whether you send them the book or not, you know, in the mail, you know, if they don't read it, or they're not willing to read the material, or they're not, you know, they're going to take an apathetic viewpoint of all this, that's not gonna cut it, man. You know, the forefathers didn't get together.
Can leave, huh? Leave PBS One and have a program that just flashed this stuff all damn day.
Subliminal programming, all of the stoplights everywhere you are, you know,
yeah.
high frequency stuff. The average person doesn't even know that they're hearing going into their brain.
Yeah, well, imagine what that would do. Oh my God!
What I'm saying is, it should be right at your fingertips, at your hand. You shouldn't have to go and dig for this stuff.
That's true.
The local candidates or something like that. It should be a special website for people that's not in, you know, that's not technologically inclined, that to help them to go right there, and if they can't mail you this information, they can just put it on the TV. They have this, what's this analog digital thing going on now? I'm pretty sure they can beam this stuff into the TV on like Channel 1 or something. And I mean, I don't see, like, you talk all the time about the age of technology we live in now, and I don't see the point in keeping the people so uninformed.
It's called money.
Well, one thing I would say about that, Jackie, is that it is a lot of the people choose to remain uninformed. That being said, they certainly could make it a lot easier. You know, it's by the way, so, now that you mentioned it, you know, I always question stuff, and one of the things that I was always, it always stuck in my head, is that the thing the internet was most used for was watching porn. And this is probably about a year ago. I says, well, I wonder if that's true. And it turns out that there's not a lot of porn watched on the internet, which isn't going to get you very far when it comes to voting for your elected official, unless it's for, I shouldn't do this, a cheap shot, Anthony Weiner. But it was a relatively small amount. So people do use it for other things, but you can't force people to be informed or intelligent. But I think what's worse than that is to have uninformed people believe that they are and believe that they have looked stuff up.
Yeah.
I think you can't force people to be uninformed.
Well, God bless you, dear. I think you'd get a tremendous amount of resistance to that.
Well, I think that there's a lot of people who would take advantage of those that are uninformed and like to take advantage of those that are uninformed, and that's why we keep seeing the system stall in certain areas of information, because and it's very hard to get at, because, you know, it's like, you know, they don't want you to know. And then again, you know, it comes back to a lot of the things you say all the time, Vern. We as people, you know, we're responsible for you know, I mean, we put way too much pressure on political candidates, you know, to be perfect, as if, you know, we're looking for, you know, Jesus or something, instead of a human being who is really going to get in there and roll up his sleeves and try to do the best he can, you know, I mean, because that's all you can ask for.
John, I know what you mean about those high expectations, because they certainly got on that one congressman. That his job was in the House of Representatives, and they got on him for skinny dipping in the Sea of Galilee. Do you remember that?
No, I don't. But I mean, it doesn't surprise me, you know.
Well, but the stupid thing is, I think they actually wound up with some pictures, you know. Not that I think there's anything particularly bad about skinny dipping in the Sea of Galilee, but, you know, one of the things, if you get to that point in life, it's not that you're not without your human characteristics. But there again, like I say, there are people out there all the time looking, you know, trying to catch you, you know, get you and stuff like that. I don't know where it's going to lead. I mean, maybe, as Mr. Politics would say, you know, if he ever shows up, maybe the answer really is in anarchy, some sort of structured anarchy, which might actually be an oxymoron too.
And I don't know if you're going to get structured anarchy. You might get anarchy, but I don't know if that would be necessarily positive, because the things that would cause that to happen wouldn't necessarily be positive. So, I don't know. I think we progressively just have to get people more and more involved. And I think people are waking up, and it just takes time. And, I think in the next cycle, there's going to be a lot more people involved. I just get the feeling that there's going to be a lot more people out there on the ground actually, you know, committing to, you know, some sort of politic, you know, because they see the need for it. And, you know, we just got to get through this cycle, from what I see, because I know that's the way I feel about it. It's just sort of like, I'm not going to stand by and wait anymore and you know, just help out a little bit. I'm actually going in and saying, hey, you know, this is crap. Let's get to the order of business here and what we
not
need to do.
It's not enough for you to do that. I said it's not enough for you to do that. There's more people that look at people like you and say, you are crazy. You
Whoa.
Need to come over here with us. And all of them that's together that look at you like you're crazy, they're divided too and looking at each other like they're crazy. Like, no, you need to join us. You need to join us. And within them, they're divided, but the thing they have in common is you all look crazy to them.
Well, you know, one of the things
that's
just came...
That's why you force people to be uninformed. It's called society, and society pressures people. It's much more cooler to watch reality shows than it is to go out and sit in front of your local candidate's house and demand that he fix that broken stop sign where people keep having accidents at.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. The one is just not fancy enough. It's just not hip, you know. You got to know what happened on that reality show the night before. To which end, one of the things that came to mind when you said that, Jackie, there's a show on I keep telling you, I watch a lot of television too. I got to keep up on all that stuff. But there's a program called Revolution, and what I was just thinking right now is, you know, I think we're really sunk if all the power grids go out and we lose all power, like, you know, for the next 10-15 years, because what the hell is a television addicted, social networking site addicted population going to do with no power, where they can't divert their attentions to all that stuff? You're going to see people flip out.
Oh, yeah.
No texting.
I won't be flipping out. I know how to read a book.
But see, fall in the category. One of the things that I'm very proud of, the other night before I went to bed, there again, I'm part of the masses in my own way. And I said, I used to be a stranger in a strange land. Though the land is sparsely populated with my people, I am no longer a stranger. Technology has helped me seek out and find you fellow strangers. We might all be nothing but voices crying in the wilderness here at 1:20 in the morning on BTR. And maybe when it all goes to crap, sometimes someone will find these archives and say there were some rational people back there.
And as far as you know, getting out, you know, and you're right, Jackie, about, you know, people call you crazy, and this group will say you're crazy, and the other group will say you're crazy. But I mean, throughout the history of people, we've had that kind of problem where, you know, you've had one person. You know, Bobby Kennedy said that, you know, it starts with one person, and in reality, that's true, because the bottom line is, when you look at what Gandhi was able to do, what King was able to do, I mean, you know, they galvanized people that were seriously repressed. And they were able to overcome. So who knows, you know, if you go out there and lift your voice up, that, you know, like we're sitting here at 1:20 or 4:20, wherever you are in the morning, that enough people won't finally say, you know, we're going to join, and we're going to get into it too, and we're going to put our weight behind it. You know, so that's the only way you can change it. You can either do that, or you can just walk away. I mean, those are the only two real possibilities here. You know, you can either go out there and roll up your sleeves and try to make something happen, or you can just walk away from it and say, screw it, you know, and I'm going to fly to Tahiti. You know, that's it, you know. So.
Well, not on the fuel cost. I can't afford it.
And maybe it takes for things to get a certain way for everybody to get on one ship, or to get one plan going.
Yeah.
It's too much stuff going on now, and the popular theme, which is to be stupid and uninformed, is the winner.
Well, you know, one thing I tell you, Jackie, you know, the fact of the matter is the price of a ticket to a good movie is more expensive than going to Walmart to get entertained. I've never been in a Walmart, because we don't have one right where I live. But
I can't believe that. That's hard. You don't have you're in the middle of California. You don't have a Walmart. It's like Walmart passed you up.
No, listen. Everything I need is probably within 10 miles of where I am. I'm sure there's one within 50 miles, but you know.
I'm just speaking from Walmart's perspective, because they seem to, you know, put themselves everywhere. You know, every 5 minutes you see a Walmart. So that's kind of
depending on how fast
unusual.
You're driving. You can
here. These people down here, where they have these $1 million homes and whatever, they are fighting now. They do not. Well, I don't think their houses is a million. I don't know. Somebody could look it up, maybe.
Well, there's one about
Buckhead. These
40
who are miles. Fighting, they do not want Walmart in their neighborhood.
Well, that could be a good thing. Yeah, the nearest one to me, John, is probably about 30
now
miles.
Now they're going to their council members and representatives to keep that Walmart out. But I bet they didn't go and see who they was before they voted for them. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe those people did. Because those people have money to sit back and relax and follow those people. But regular, ordinary people, like where I work at, most of the people I work with work two jobs. And I look at them like, and they're older than me. And I did that when I was in my 20s. And I'm like, man, this is a waste of time. I couldn't do that again. And I'm looking at people in their late 60s, you know,
jeez,
late 50s. Working two jobs. Crazy. This is the world that people live in. When they get home, they don't have time to look at news and all of that. They might want to get a laugh and go to sleep, because they got to be right back up to go to that next job. Like, you can't even spend time with your family working two jobs, but this is what we have to do to put gas in our car to get to one job.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, folks, we've got 90 seconds if you want to continue into overtime with us. You know, I got to let you know now. I meant to let you know a couple minutes ago, but I forgot. Yeah, you know, the country's changed. You know, maybe the problem is just too many people listening to living too long, living to be too old. In my own case, Jackie, I plan on working till I die. But that being said, I've been self-employed most of my life because most people probably wouldn't want to hire an attitude problem like me. That's what I was told in the Army. I had an attitude problem. And I always used to say, what does attitude have to do with it? As long as I do my job, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, the country's facing a lot of problems. And my generation, the baby boomers are going on to the Social Security system. I probably will hold off. You know, I'm eligible. I'll probably hold off till I'm 70 or whatever. I'm, you know, if I can make it, you know, why burden the system anymore than it's going to be burdened? But a lot of people believe, well, you know, I'm owed it. I worked for it. I deserve it. And,
is that what they were told?
Say that again, Jackie.
Is that what they were told?
Yeah, they paid into it. Yeah, they think they're owed it because they paid into it, yeah.
Yeah, but what they weren't told, you know, people of our generation, John, is that the amounts that we paid into it, if you look at the rates over the years, weren't sufficient to cover what we're going to get out of it.
Yeah, but I think a lot of this has to do with, and going back to Jackie's point too, with the, you know, just the corporate structure here and the way things go on. Because I mean, if you really break it down, you know, if you want to take, you know, adding payroll tax to, you know, someone every $250,000, you know, if you take someone who makes $500,000, $2,500 a year comes out to about $60 a week to this person. That's nothing. But to someone who is making $40,000 and putting in, you know, 1%, they're putting a lot of sweat into that, and that really can hurt them because it can affect their housing and everything. I mean, you're making $500,000 a year, man. You got something going on. And you're probably employing people and so forth. I mean, people don't break the numbers down. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
but here's the problem with all those arguments as I see them, okay? Let's deal with the Social Security thing. Is you can literally go to the Social Security site and you can look at the withholding rates since when it went into place and through our generation. And, okay, so you can look at them all, and they started off at 3%, and the caps were incredibly low back then. Right now the cap is around $106,000,
right.
I think. Now, the problem is people say, well, we could solve our problem if we raised cap, the amount that the withholdings cover, right? What they don't tell you is at that particular point you need to start calling it a tax, because what they're saying is they're not going to increase the payouts for people that could afford to pay more. They're going to use that money to shore up the system. So you wind up with part of the people being told that they're getting money back they put in, but people in the upper income brackets not getting that back, otherwise it's a wash.
Well, I agree with that, but I mean, I'm not against the tax. I mean, if you want to call it a tax, just like, you know, they did with the health care, you know, it's a tax. I'm not against the tax. I think there's certain things, just like, you know, I mean, it depends on a person's perspective, obviously,
yeah.
But I think there's certain...
What people have problems with in terms of, what people have problems in terms of this generation and the baby boomers going on there, is for them, they're going to say you're changing the game midstream. That's not what you said. See, the problem is Congress dances back and forth, and on one hand says you're getting back the money you deserve. The sacred program is just money you set aside for your retirement. And then on the other side of their mouth, they're saying, well, you know, we could really take more for you. But they're not saying you won't get it back. They're saying that if we could tax all that money, that upper income, and collect tax, but without paying it back, we'd have enough to shore up the system. And people there say, well, wait a second, why am I, you know, no one's been subsidizing anyone. It's supposed to be what we put in. We're supposed to get it back in proportion to what we put in. So there's a disingenuity, a dishonesty there in the whole conversation.
Well, you see, to that I would say, from the other side of the argument, every business has been subsidized to some degree or other because they get better tax breaks, they get something from the government that other people are not getting. So, you know, and they're being given that because it's for the good of the people, so that people have jobs and this and that. So if you're doing something for the good of the people, just like the military's for the good of the people, why not? I'm not saying everything, and I'm not suggesting socialism by any means.
That's a very interesting proposition, because one of the things, you know, the military was actually, as I say, part of the original Constitution. That's one of the problems when you get into reading the Davy Crockett piece, you know, Public Money and Private Supplications, where the person that has the conversation with Crockett says that government should ought to have no more in their coffers than is necessary for legitimate public business. But I'll give you an example too. One of the things with Social Security, do you know about the non-working spouse benefits?
Expound upon that.
What the non-working spouse benefit is, and a lot of people have complained about this, is it's predicated on the fact that the wife was important in running the family, which is that part is true, okay? But if, let's say you had two twin brothers, one was married and one wasn't, the non-working spouse at the time of retirement gets half the amount that their spouse gets, and half there again the amount their spouse gets when they reach the age of 65 as well, even though the spouse didn't put in anything for their spouse into the system. So you have two brothers. In one case, one's getting 1.5 times the Social Security benefits because they're married. In the other case, they're only getting one Social Security benefit and no one's put in.
Obviously there needs to be changes to the system. There's
an inequity in that makes for a huge amount of payouts in Social Security, you know, that could offset a lot of stuff that goes out. So, you know, and there again, it was not set up to be a major retirement. There again, when it was set up, they didn't count on you living a whole lot longer after you started to get it. In many cases, depending on the tables and actuaries you live, people died before they took it out. The life expectancy was 62 or 63. And I've heard some people jack those numbers around. The point being is if the average life expectancy is 62 or 63 and you're going to get it at 65, then if you were going to make an equivalent adjustment today, people would be eligible for Social Security about at the age of 80 or 81. Now, if people were eligible for it at 80 or 81, we wouldn't have a money shortage.
Well, I suspect we probably would, because, you know, they'd find some way to give more money into corporate sponsorship. So, you know, I mean, I think that's where a lot of the inequity lies right now. I mean, there's
well, you know, the other person gets screwed, if you want to put it that way, you get screwed on Social Security, is in terms of the people, what you pay in is if you're self-employed, you pay the full amount. If you work for someone, your employer pays half of what your total amount.
Mm.
So right now it comes out to be 15.1% or something. If you're self-employed, you're going to pay the whole 15.1%. If you work for someone, you pay a little over 7.5% or something like that. My numbers might be off a little bit, but that's the basic thing. So, and you don't get any more benefit when you retire if you're self-employed than if you weren't. We've got major problems coming down the pike.
The
irony is, you know, the Social Security is the least of the problems because it's the Medicare and prescription drug plans that are out there, and there are no easy solutions. Any politician that was truly honest would say that. Social Security Trust Fund, in fact, says that to be self-sustaining and supporting, we would have to raise the current rates from their current total rate of a little over 15% to 21 or 22%. Now, you tell me how much people are going to jump up and down for that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that there can be other things done, but I think my general point here is this. I mean, if somebody goes and they're working, you know, and you said this before, you know, what work is you know, the equity of your work. Someone's going and they're working and they're working and they're working, okay, versus someone who, you know, may have created something and they're working for that person. And that person deserves more, and there's no saying that they don't. But the bottom line is the person who is working deserves, you know, and making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, whatever they're making, deserves something. Some sort of safety net underneath them, medically and for old age and so forth. I'm not saying, you know, I wouldn't, you know, give them everything, but I think there's some basic things there, just as we have an army to protect us. You know, I think there's some basic things that necessarily need to be there, because that's part of Americanism, and I think that that's what we need to get back to. We need to get back to a we the people standpoint, and it helps the rich man, if you will, if the poor man isn't suffering, because if he's not suffering, he's not going to steal. If he's not suffering, he's going to do a better job for you, et cetera, which sort of you know, props up the country, and we're all in it together to a certain degree. You know, I don't think that we should be given, you know, everything, but I think there's certain things that people who go out and work a janitor's job, you know, every day of their life, and like Jackie was talking about, some people are working two jobs, they have a right at some point to say, I'm tired, and I'm, you know, I haven't been able to save as much, I need some help here, and I put something into this, I should be able to get something back out of it. And I think that they could do that if we weren't into this international monopoly thing. I think that's really what cuts us down most of the time, because it seems like that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the corporations are getting their money. They're getting their tax cuts. They're getting their locations, their targeted tax cuts. They're getting all kinds of benefits from the federal government, corporate welfare, and these people are working their ass off. And at the end of their life, they're saying, "Hey, I just want, you know, something to help me so that I'm, you know, able to sustain myself because I gave you the best years of my life." You know, I think that's only fair from an American standpoint. That's the way I look at it anyway. I don't think we're going to be able to do anything else, because all the rest of this stuff just sort of divides us away from each other, and it's only going to bring us to a point where you're going to get people who aren't going to give you their best because they're not getting back, what they're putting in. You know, I mean, they're, you know, 40 grand, you know, well, I can barely send my kid to college, you know, and I don't have anything. You know, I mean, I'm not going to give you everything I got, because the mentality is like you're taking 100% or 400% or whatever, Mr. Corporation. So I'm not going to give you everything I got. And I think that's what breaks down the system. If we take it from an American perspective and everyone gets help, then everyone gets better because of it, and the country gets stronger because of it.
Yeah,
I don't know if that makes any sense.
If we took it from an American system, and then people would step up to the plate volitionally in their own communities and take care of their own too.
Well, okay, but you know,
I suggest, you know, one of the things that always amazes, and I'm not particularly against any of the things you've said, except for the following, is that I need to do a show on corporations, because one of the things that came to mind based on their entity and structures, at the heart of corporations are stockholders, right? And their job is, you know, that's most of the money. The corporation is just a flow through for money, and they're funded for the most part by stockholders, and most of the money goes back in the corporation. Yeah, you got CEOs and stuff that make huge salaries, but in terms of the total outlay of money, yeah, I understand that CEOs make $150 million and that's obscene and all that, but in terms of the amount of money that goes from one place to another, that's small. That's like the $465 million for PBS that people are complaining about when we're hemorrhaging hundreds of billions elsewhere, or even 45 billion or 40 billion to Israel. I mean, they're different scales. And so one of the problems I have is that I think it's very easy to pick out a whipping boy, you call it a corporation, whatever you want to call the boogeyman, put all the blame there, and it keeps us from having to take a deeper look at ourselves.
Well, I'm not saying that there's not anything else that we can't do, but when I target corporations specifically, I'm targeting the idea, and I would agree with even the subsidies to Israel. I mean, anything that we're taking outside of our country, if you look at the countries, what I've noticed is if you look at countries that make it, okay, or that are making it, they take care of themselves first, and then they worry about, you know, they take care of themselves first. That becomes important. Germany, if you look at the Netherlands, even China has adopted that kind of an attitude, and that's why they laugh at us, because they look at us and they see these people playing international monopoly, and it's like, that ain't going to fly with China. If you go into China, you're going to give us your technology, and you're going to do it our way.
Let me give you an example. This is one of the articles I had up for tonight, John. I've been trying to get to it for a while now and stuff. And it's the real story behind record corporate profits. Now, that's the type of a headline that gets everyone's attention and gets people all fired up about the corporations here. And I probably won't get all the way through this. This actually is from 10/22/2010. So it's a couple years old, but the points there that it wants to put across. That you got the headline, and when you and I were growing up, you read the headline, that's the attention grabber. The first sentence gives you kind of an idea where the article is supposed to go. But you usually have to get to the rest of the article to really see what it says. The real kernel is usually in the back of the piece, and people are impatient and don't get there. Anyway, it opens. Corporate profits hit new record in the U.S. in the third quarter of this year. At least that was the headline after the data was released Tuesday. It's the kind of meaningless distinction in a growing economy, even in a fitfully growing one, corporate profits should hit new records on a pretty regular basis. And he goes on to talk about personal income also hit new records in the same quarter that corporate profits did. And we don't want to do our homework on the things that we read and put out there and who we blame for what's going on.
Yeah, well,
when you take away the corporate profit, you know how many, and they're not necessarily rich seniors, depend on corporate profits for their retirements?
Well, you know, I know a bit about the market, and unless they're rich, they're not making very much money, you know, because you know, people that are moderately well-to-do don't make a very good deal on the markets. And when you get into markets, you're talking about whether you're a primary stockholder or a secondary stockholder. You get into a whole bunch of different stuff. I'm just my point with the corporations is anything that goes outside of this country, and it seems that money people, let's not call them corporations, let's talk about greedy people, who buy our politicians so that they can maneuver our system, so that they can play international monopoly, doesn't fly with me. And I think that's where a great deal of...
It doesn't fly with me either, John, but the point that we keep raising on this show is that's a statement about the politicians that we elect and keep sending back there, because it's the other guys that's crooked and not ours, because ours is the good guy, because he brings the pork barrel stuff back to our district, whether it's the best thing for the country or not, and we're not doing our job in terms of cleaning house on a regular basis and holding their nose to the fire. It's like I've said this, I don't know if I said it this much on this show, but in the years I've been doing radio, I said, you know, radio is a great place to discuss substantive issues in a shallow, meaningless fashion. Because, you know, people, you know, and this is not directed at you, I think we're having some substantive conversations here. I always think we do. But in the years I've done it, I've heard the call-ins that will tell you what they think about what's going on as if that has made as much difference as the guy that's out there knocking on doors for a candidate, you know, making the cold calls to see if people out there is, I did my part, now they know how, what I think and how I feel about the situation. Time to pop the beer and get the chips and watch the football game. It all boils back to, comes back to us, in my opinion.
I agree with you.
You know,
I agree with them.
You know, it's like I've given the examples, Fritz Hollings. You know, there are subtle little things that, and it's not that I'm brilliant or see stuff, but I remember watching Fritz Hollings. Like I say, I can't remember whether he's Louisiana or whatever, on 60 Minutes talking about a whole career of corruption. He's in his 80s, and everyone's cheering him for the bravery of exposing the corruption in Congress, in the Senate, right? And I'm thinking, throw his ass in jail. I don't give a shit that he is 82. Put that old man in jail. If he pulled off all that corruption and cutting deals while representing the people, and we got him on tape now, why are we applauding his ass?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I agree with you. The only reason I bring it up is because I think that we need to get back to an American solution, you know, and there's still people who are, you know, and I'm not saying that all the, you know, one side is great and the other side is all crooked. I'm just saying we need to get back to an American solution. Right now we got to get through this particular process that we're going through, but more people need to get out there and do what you're talking about, you know, which is, you know, get involved in the system and get
to
an American solution. What?
And listen,
I didn't hear you.
I said, and listen to Vernon.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, you know, I agree with you that we put the wrong people in office. We need to, and it comes down again to what we were talking about before with, you know, expecting these people. I heard Bill Maher had the best line. He said, you know, we expect Obama to be chocolate Jesus. You know, and I just thought that was hysterical because, I mean, that's exactly where it's at. You know, we're looking at all politicians as, you know, we want them to be this messiah that, you know, whoever it is, it doesn't make any difference. But, you know, we want them to be this messiah who comes out and saves us, you know, from ourselves. And that no one's going to save us from ourselves except us. You know, we're going to save ourselves.
You know, I'll give you one of the best metaphors that I can come up with, and Tocqueville talked about it, and I've done the quote before, is, you know, our politicians in Washington are the candy man, and we're the junkies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
they tell, first one's free. First one's free, you know.
Yeah.
Aren't you going to like this? It's cost you now. It's going to cost you now.
Yeah. And then while it costs you now, then they're shoveling with the other hand, giving away to whoever's, you know, sponsoring their campaign. And, you know, I think that needs to stop as well. You know, I mean, we need to put ourselves in order, but we need to stop that from going on as well, because that
PBS.
More PBS, yeah. More Big Bird, man. Big Bird for president. And I was thinking before, you know, it would be a great thing since everybody's into so many reality shows. Let's skip all of this campaign finance funding and put a camera in each candidate's house and watch them go around from day to day. You know, get up in the morning and brush their teeth and, you know, do everything that they've got to do and hear their most intimate stuff. I guarantee you, then people'd pay attention, huh?
Oh, I think that'd be great. But
yeah.
As I also say, you know, I would like to see them out of Washington. You know, have them come back to their districts. California is a big state. We have our representatives. They should be living in California. Jack, your elected official should be where you are. Your congressman should be right around the corner so you get your hands on, at least once a month, once every couple months anyway, so you can show up there in a town hall and say, hey, you lying son of a bitch. You said you're going to be doing this. Why you got this rider in this bill, or why are you cutting this deal here?
Yeah,
you know, with the technology, there's no reason that couldn't be done.
No, and the bills should be smaller, you know, so that we don't, you know, it should be made that way. It's so that everybody can look through it, and it's not, you know, I mean, take it piece by piece, and people should be more cooperative, as you started your program with, is to listen to the other people and stop playing a game of saying, you know, well, we're going to get rid of this person, you know, now because we don't like them just because they're on the other side of the process. You know, why not communicate and try to do what's best for the country? And again, you know, stop, you know, all the money from flowing out of here. Let's flow it back into, you know, us. You know, we're the ones who are putting it out, because, I mean, when you look at what's going on locally, you know, people talk about, you know, their taxation and you know, all this money, all this imbalance, you know, your housing taxes go up, your state taxes go up. All this happens because all this money is flowing out somewhere else, and these people are playing, partially because these people are playing international monopoly. How about bringing that back here? So that we don't have to pay as much on our houses, so that we don't have to pay as much on our state tax. You know, because, you know, when the states get strapped, then it becomes hard for a business to open up because they start putting regulation upon regulation on it so that they can make money, so that they can make up the money that they're losing because, you know, they can't fund themselves properly. So, you know, we need to cut some of the programs and streamline some of these ideas, but we also need to bring the money back into ourselves, you know, and put it back into us rather than, you know, into Indonesia. You know, and these people who are just relocating so that they can make a profit, you know, which annoys, obviously you can hear, annoys me greatly. So.
Well, yeah, there's tons of stuff going on there. On the backside is we've gotten to the point that we want cheap, you know, cheap goods here in the United States, don't want to pay much for anything, you know, and it's all symbiotic and ties together, you know, so that. Even when you talk about wages have stayed stagnant, you know, buying power and the goods that some people seem to want has gone up. You know, like I say, I can go out and buy a brand new laptop today for $299. The first computer I had was a PC Junior, and that was over $1,500. When $1,500 was probably worth $3,000-$4,000, and I didn't buy it. Everyone chipped in for, because I was a graduate student then, so I could have something to write my thesis work on.
Yeah, but you know, businesses are way too sloppy too, and they don't organize well and become creative well. I mean, you quoted your friend there who had written you an article about how you can, or shown you an article, I don't remember which one it was, how you could put businesses back in the United States. And I've been saying things like that for a long time. I mean, this is a question of being creative in your thinking and the way you do business.
For those of you listening to the archive, I had a friend that says, hey, that they've done study after study that shows that the Americans are 7 to 10 times more productive than anyone else. You know, and we've got the technology to do things, and I brought it up in a show a long time ago, is that when you start looking at it from that standpoint, it sounds like America's got the ability to tool up, machine up, and technologically produce products that we're paying low wages to other people to do, making the product the same low cost here, paying our laborers high money, becoming a net exporter to the rest of the world because we make up the labor costs in the technology, notwithstanding the fact that China is undergoing tremendous problems right now, and this cheap production of goods in China looks like it might be running itself out too, because their energy costs are going up, they're polluting their country, you know, there's all sorts of effects and things going on there. So I think we can, but our kids need to be taught that maybe there are things better than being, I was going to say Britney Spears, but there's more to life than making it on American Idol or The Voice or something else, you know, a very small group of people make it into that entertainment world, and it's legitimate to learn the technological skills to get technological manufacturing jobs. The importance of school should be promoted to students. As I said last week, kids need to have adult mentors. You know, they need to have adults that are willing to listen to them. You know, they have to have, as Jackie's pointed out, parents that grow up, parents that realize that they had their shot at being a kid, and their job now is to be an adult parent and be available there for the kid and for guidance and counsel.
And to that point, there's a government estimate out there that there's a million jobs out there that could be done that we don't, that we're not tooled up for. So, I mean, that's important. But also on the top end down, you see companies do very, very sloppy business. You know, some are very good, but some are very, very sloppy in the way they do their business. And, you know, it's much easier, you know, to go somewhere else where you can pay 25 cents an hour to get it done and then, you know, to ship it back rather than make it here. You know, and those, you know,
I'm about ready to get cut off, John, here. I'm going to try to do a real quick humorous joke to close it out.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with manufacturing or anything else, but it's one that I spent some time learning a long time ago. There's a poetry contest at Harvard between an English major, PhD student, and a redneck, cowboy. Mm-hmm. Their job was to come up with a rhyme for the word Timbuktu. They give them 10 minutes to do that. They come back, the educated Harvard graduate student gets up to the microphone and says, far across the desert sands, trekked a lonely caravan, men on camels, two by two, destination Timbuktu. Mm-hmm. Crowd went nuts. So there's no way the redneck could, in fact, top that. So he comes up, gives him a big toothy grin, pulls his toothpick out of his mouth, pushes his cowboy hat back, and says, me and Tim are hunting wet. Met three whores in a pop-up tent. They was three and we was two, so I bucked one and Tim bucked two.
Yeah.
I think that's a funny joke.
No,
it's got
is.
A nice flow, nice flow to it, little poetic.
That was hilarious.
I should close every show with a joke at the end of the night. What it takes to tell a good joke is to remember the punchline, so all I had to do is remember the, oh, we're done. You guys still there? We're going to get cut off shortly here because it dropped the end of the show. We're almost to the end. Thank you so much, as always, for showing up. We'll do it again tomorrow night. Good to have you call in again, John and Jackie.